presented by DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
I would not describe Georgia coach Kirby Smart as particularly shy, but he may be even more emboldened now than ever, at least soon this may be the case, to really hammer home a message that I believe he feels really strongly about. Let me explain it this way. We are coming up on the NFL draft. Now, for most Georgia fans, the early attention, the excitement right now is about the upcoming spring practice. We're just a few days away from that beginning for real, and that's what Georgia fans are excited about. Pro Day will be kind of mixed in that. There's a little bit of interest in that. But then after that, you get the NFL draft. And while Georgia fans are obsessed over what's going to happen with spring practice, the football world in general is somewhat obsessed with the NFL draft. It's just one of the big sporting events of the spring. Everybody seems to get interested in that. Around here, though, for Dog Nation Daily and around these parts, we tend to look at the draft not so much for which team so-and-so player is going to go play for, but it's more about what does the draft say about the current state of college football, and how can programs like Georgia, coaches like Smart, how can they use the draft to build the stature and bring in more elite recruits. We never stop thinking about recruiting around here. That's for the good or for the bad, just the way we are. And we talk about the NFL draft in relationship to what it could mean for the future of Georgia football. In fact, last year on the day of the draft, we had one of our buddies, friends of the program, Chase Goodbread, NFL.com, on the show. Chase is one of these guys that covers college football from a draft angle, so he knows both the college part of this, the pro part of this, and we were previewing some of the UGA guys and where they might be picked. But Chase made it very clear, when it comes to nights like Georgia had in 2017, the draft last year, after the 2017 season, when it put, you know, guys like, you know, Roquan Smith and Nick Chubb and Sonny Michel into the NFL, when it put Davin Bellamy and Lorenzo Carter there, populating a lot of rosters with former Dogs, Chase explained then, that is really good for programs. And that was true for Georgia in last year's NFL draft. It's going to be true for this year's NFL draft as well. In fact, here's how Chase Goodbread said it.
Today is as big a day for recruiting as the year in terms of being able to generate interest and respect from recruits, and the more of those type of guys you have, the easier it is to get more.
So Chase Goodbread hammers home what is kind of an obvious point. Recruits are paying attention to the NFL draft, because who wouldn't, if you play football, want to make millions of dollars in the league, and who wouldn't want to be a part of a program that makes it a little easier to get into the NFL? And Georgia is building for itself the kind of brand that makes getting to the NFL a little easier. Some of these paths are conventional, and some of them maybe are a bit unconventional. And an example of the unconventional path into the first round of the NFL draft is what I want to talk about right now, because I thought that Dane Brugler, who I think works for The Athletic now, worked for CBS Sports for a while, he's one of these NFL draft analysts, he tweeted out a little blurb from something, I guess, that he had written about Georgia wide receiver Riley Ridley that I thought was really interesting. And this will be interesting for Ridley and his future in the NFL, but as we say around here, it'll also be really interesting to see how Georgia uses this, and I believe this is going to become, if this happens anyway, I think it's going to become pretty interesting fodder for Kirby Smart. Let me show you the tweet if you're watching on video. Bob Sturm is the one that retweets this, but it's the note comes from Dane Brugler writing, like I said, I believe it's from The Athletic now. I apologize for not knowing that. Brugler writes about Riley Ridley that he's attempting to be the first receiver drafted top 50 overall without a 600-yard-plus receiving season in college since Eddie Royal did that in 2008. And Royal was from Virginia Tech, I believe. So he's trying to be drafted top 50 without a 600-yard-plus receiving season. That hasn't happened since 2008. And really, if you look at some of these mock drafts, not only could Ridley be taken in the top 50, which is the first round and part of the second round, I mean, some of these mock drafts have Ridley going in the first round of the NFL draft. There's really no shortage of mocks that have him at least in that conversation, if not the first 32 picks, like 33, 34, something like that. I mean, Riley Ridley is very much knocking on the door of being in the first round of the NFL draft, which is life-changing generational wealth for he and his family for a long time to come. And he would do that in the NFL without ever having a big statistical season at Georgia. Now, can you imagine for a moment how Kirby Smart would be able to spin that? For receivers who come to UGA wanting touches and wanting attention, wanting the limelight, Kirby Smart, if this indeed plays out with Ridley, if he goes top 50, it's a pretty good salary. If he goes in the first round, it's even bigger point to make. It's even better argument to make. You want this attention. You want to do things your way. But look at what doing things my way got for Riley Ridley. He was a team player. He blocked. He participated in the team concept. He didn't put himself above the team. And look how much money he's making now playing for so-and-so team, whatever team. He didn't get a lot of touches, didn't get a lot of yards at Georgia, but now he's making a bunch of money in the NFL draft. That would become a very big argument for Kirby Smart to make if he is indeed able to make it. I mean, think about how this would have impacted, let's say, Jaden Hazelwood's recruitment. I'm not going to try to in any way say that Ridley's draft position would have changed Hazelwood's mind. Hazelwood seemed pretty content on going to Oklahoma. And I do realize that Hazelwood's one of these names that some of you would wish I'd rather not bring up. Some people don't like talking about the ones that are no longer at Georgia. I totally get that. This is just a brief point to make. Let's go back to last October and listen to some of the ways in which Hazelwood talked about how he views the Georgia offense. Now, if you're dissatisfied with Hazelwood because he chose Oklahoma over Georgia, just hear this as the representation of what an elite receiver might possibly think when he looks in on UGA, and think about how Ridley's status in the draft might potentially change that. Here's Jaden Hazelwood.
Is the best way Georgia gets back in it to with you is they open it up, they throw it more, and they...
Exactly. Because for me to go there, that's a major switch up from the offense. Me going to an offense like that will probably take a lot for me to learn. Not because you got to learn, like, how to block somebody every play. I'm not used to that type of offense. You know, I'm a spread type of offense, because that's what I run in high school.
You'd be fine with blocking and all those duties.
Exactly, because I block now.
You know what I'm saying? So, as long as they took more shots, I guess.
Yeah. Make it not just for the running backs. You know what I'm saying?
So you hear a lot there from Hazelwood. He says, listen, I got to go to Georgia. I got to learn how to block. You know, I'm a spread guy. Georgia's not a spread offense. It's a pro-style offense. He insinuates that the Georgia situation is kind of mostly just for the running backs. And I know for some people, they don't like hearing Hazelwood say these things, especially given the fact that he ended up signing with Oklahoma as an in-state prospect from the state of Georgia. But when you hear Hazelwood give all those reasons why he might not like Georgia, imagine how the next generation of Jaden Hazelwood's mind could potentially be changed if Kirby Smart or Cortez Hankton can say, yeah, I get your objection, and yeah, I hear your concerns, but look at Riley Ridley. 500-something yards receiving in his final year at Georgia, drafted top 50 overall, potentially drafted in the first round. I think that changes a lot, because Kirby Smart has been really steadfast on this. Kirby Smart, when he's been asked about wide receivers, has been very clear that he likes playing a lot of guys. He likes letting the defense dictate how he uses his wide receivers, and he's really happy with what he's kind of called a wide receiver approach by committee. In fact, if you go back to just before the SEC championship game, essentially at the conclusion of the regular portion of the 2018 season, when he was asked about his wide receivers going into that game against Alabama, he basically laid it out that way, that we use a lot of different guys, we ask them to do a lot of different things, and to the tune of Riley Ridley, that game plan may work out to NFL riches. Here's Kirby from December.
They've improved with each week. I think, you know, every game's kind of had a different layout with different wideouts, kind of being able to showcase their abilities. It doesn't happen by planning by us. It happens by what defenses do and kind of what we get dictated to us by the coverages and how they play us. But I think they've played really hard. They've been a huge asset on special teams. I think six of those guys start on special teams and do all kinds of things to make our team better. And they've really bought into being a physical core unit, and that's what makes them different.
I think that is a really important piece of audio from Kirby Smart. What you hear from him there is he is very comfortable using receivers on special teams, even though the glamour guys may not like that quite as much. He is very comfortable using the word physical to describe wide receivers, even though from the lips of one 5-star receiver a moment ago, physical wasn't exactly the way that he wanted to be thought of himself. He is very comfortable saying, we let the defense dictate which receiver we use and how many touches we give those guys, and we're okay with it being a different guy every single week. Not every fan likes that. Not every high school receiver likes that. But Kirby Smart, who's known to be a little stubborn from time to time, he doesn't seem to want to change on that. And if Riley Ridley goes on to have really good success in terms of where he gets drafted, not to mention what Terry Gowan and McCall Harmon might be able to do, then Kirby Smart's going to have the ammunition he needs to say, my way works. This NFL draft, like a lot of these are for Georgia, could be a pretty strong statement about the future of the Georgia program, where Kirby Smart can say, you don't have to get a lot of touches. You don't have to get a lot of yards. You don't have to get a lot of accolades to one day get a lot of money in the NFL draft. My guess is that message from Kirby could be a message that's well received by a lot of future recruits. My name is Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Hello to you. Thanks for being with us live on video today. 10 a.m. Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Rev, and in podcast form, pretty much wherever you can find podcasts. That's going to be important later on, the podcast, as we get ready to give away another Road to Atlanta t-shirt. By the way, if you haven't seen these, let me just show this to the video audience. I apologize, radio and podcast, you can't see this. But here it is, the Road to Atlanta t-shirt. I think it's a really cool t-shirt. I think it's a really important idea that Georgia is trying to do more in 2019. The team has said that around here. We support that. And doing more means getting back to Atlanta, and it means taking down those folks from Alabama to the West in the SEC Championship, maybe even getting back there for the Peach Bowl and being the number one seed in the college football playoff and have it all run through Atlanta on the way to a national championship. It's a lot of fun to think about, and we are certainly excited about doing our part to help solidify that message with our Road to Atlanta t-shirt giveaway. We'll do another one of these a little bit later on in our program. We'll also get Mike Griffith here in a minute, too. Now, I just talked for a few minutes off the top of the show why Riley Ridley not getting a ton of receiving yards, but potentially being drafted in the top 50 of the NFL draft could be a really good thing. I do have to admit, fair and balanced for a moment, that there is also a chance that there's another potential take on this of, well, if you got a first-round wide receiver, why didn't you use him more? I think that's a fair question. It may not ultimately be a criticism that sticks to Smart, but the inverse of that discussion, I think, is certainly a fair question, and we'll talk about that a little bit with our buddy Mike Griffith coming up in just a moment. Let me also say, as we go around the doghouse here, presented today by Engineered Solutions of Georgia, that once again, and this has become kind of a rite of passion around here with Dog Nation Daily, once again, here as we head towards this 2019 recruiting cycle, something that I've chosen to get a little worked up about as we go around the doghouse, something I've chosen to get a little concerned about, has turned out to not really be that big of a deal. You know, 2018, it's what's wrong with Georgia recruiting. There's been all kinds of threads about that at the forum at forum.dognation.com. What's wrong with UGA recruiting? Why is the 2018 class off to such a slow start? You probably had some issues with the 2019 class as well, and it ends up being, you know, rock solid and as good as it could possibly be. Well, here we are in the 2020 cycle, and we talked to Jeff Sintel about this yesterday. You had Rakeem Jarrett, the five-star wide receiver. He takes a visit to Tennessee. Shortly after that visit to Tennessee, he's like, commitment coming soon. And listen, I told this to Jeff yesterday. I got a little bit of respect for T. Martin. I think that Martin is a potentially very interesting name for Tennessee with its offensive recruiting staff. I think that's the kind of guy who's, you know, he's signed five stars before. If Jarrett takes that visit and then off on the that visit says commitment coming soon, even though Tennessee's not the only school thought to be in the mix for Jarrett's services, got a little bit of respect for that. And so I asked Jeff Sintel yesterday when he joined us in the program, hey, how worried should I be as a Georgia fan, a guy that likes Jarrett, wouldn't mind seeing Jarrett in red and black, that Jarrett goes to Tennessee and then and very quickly after that says, I'm about to commit coming soon. Well, Jeff did his part to talk me off the ledge yesterday, and here's what Jeff had to say.
These young men are not authors. They don't get paid to tweet for a living, of course, but perhaps Rakeem Jarrett is not talking about his own commitment, but perhaps another commitment. That's option A. Option B is, yeah, he's about to commit. He's taken a couple of trips to Tennessee that wowed him. Taking a trip to Georgia as well that wowed him. Lots of schools are in the mix. He's always been a longstanding Ohio State type guy. And lots of folks thought he would eventually end up in Columbus. Number three could possibly mean none of the above, because also on social media, I'm sure you saw the initial tweet, but he also said, when a lot of folks said, well, you haven't visited Clemson, so there's no way you're going to Clemson. And then Rakeem Jarrett said that, well, there's no way I'm committing until I see Clemson.
So Jeff says, listen, who knows what Jarrett means when he says commitment coming soon. This may not even be a commitment to a school. It may be a commitment to an all-star game or something like that. It could also just mean just some sort of chatter. He referenced the fact that he later on says, I'm not committing anywhere until I visit Clemson. So there's kind of a lot to consider when it comes to Rakim Jarrett right there. But maybe from a Georgia fan's perspective who might be concerned about this, too much too soon for Jarrett, it sounds like he's not done with Georgia, not by a long shot. In fact, here is what Jarrett recently tweeted about UGA on the heels of the conversation that I had with Jeff yesterday. Here is Rakim Jarrett saying that he's actually got a visit to UGA coming up very soon. He says UGA next week. So once again, you know, this is kind of a rite of passage, kind of a tradition around Dog Nation Daily. We get a little worked up about some of these recruiting storylines, but looks like Jarrett, not only is he not going to commit until he gets a chance to visit Clemson, he's also coming back to see Georgia again too. So maybe the definition of how soon Rakim Jarrett, the five-star wide receiver, is committing. Maybe that definition is kind of up for grabs here at the moment. So nonetheless, I'd love to see Georgia get in the mix some more with Jarrett, and then this will be a fun storyline to watch as the 2020 cycle continues to unfold. Around the Doghouse here today is brought to you by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. And you know, Engineered Solutions of Georgia does a lot of really important things for your house, whether it's foundation repair, basement waterproofing, crawl space encapsulation. They also offer a lifetime of support. So if you got a cracked foundation or a wet basement or a damp crawl space, make sure you have one of their qualified professional technicians come out to your home. They're the only foundation repair that company the Dog Nation would trust because they're the only ones with a full-time engineer on staff. So make sure you give them a call. 678-ESOG now. That's 678-ESOG now. You will love Engineered Solutions of Georgia. All right, later on, we've got a Road to Atlanta t-shirt to give away. We'll have a fun topic involving UGA 2019 quarterback signee Dwan Mathis. But for now, for more on the SEC tournament where Mike is located and everything else going on with Georgia football, let's talk to Mike Griffith right here on Dog Nation Daily.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insight.
Mike is in Nashville. Georgia plays in the SEC tournament later on this evening. We'll talk about that in just a moment as Georgia tries to finish its 2019 season on a high note after some rough going in the SEC, including the home finale against Missouri last week, and probably not much better in Columbia against the Gamecocks either. Nonetheless, we'll talk some basketball with Mike in just a moment. Mike, if you don't mind, though, before that, can I bring you in on a topic I was discussing before you joined us today?
Sure.
So I was talking about Riley Ridley, and Dane Brugler is a draft analyst. He was pointing out that there's a chance that Ridley could be the first wide receiver since 2008 to be drafted in the top 50 without having at least a 600-yard receiving season in college. Obviously, Ridley was 500-something yards this past year for UGA. And the point that I made off the top is, for Kirby Smart, this becomes a really big message to send to recruits that if you come here, I can get you to the NFL and even maybe being drafted first round or certainly in the top 50 without getting a whole lot of touches. That validates the team concept. But Mike, as I said a moment ago, there is also potentially another side of this coin that we at least ought to consider for a moment. Georgia's offense was really good, but came short of winning the national championship. And if you have a first round caliber wide receiver, some people are going to say, well, maybe you should have used him more, and maybe you could have won a game that you lost had you found a way to prioritize a guy like Ridley more than Georgia did. Where would you come down on that conversation?
Well, I mean, Georgia runs a pro-style offense, and thus, you know, Jake Fromm goes to the line and makes a pre-snap read, and, you know, as much as those NFL scouts have identified Riley as a talented receiver, this might shock some people, but the defensive coordinators in the SEC probably know that too. So I would suggest that there's probably a good chance that Riley saw his share of shaded coverage, if not double coverage. And if I'm Jake Fromm and I do my pre-snap read and I realize that I have Mecole Hardman in man coverage or maybe Isaac Nauta not being covered at all on a release, I'll probably do that instead of throw into double coverage because Georgia felt confident in all their receivers out there. It wasn't like there was Riley Ridley was the lone ranger. It's not like he's the only guy that could catch a pass. I mean, Terry Godwin had some – I'd say Terry Godwin probably had the best hands out of all the receivers, frankly. If anybody's going to complain about not being used more, I'd have said Terry Godwin was the one underutilized. But nevertheless, he got off to a slow start with an injury. But the point being that coverage is – and down and distance dictates a lot of what Georgia does. And remember, you know, Georgia has run a high percentage of run plays, more so than most teams. I mean, Kirby is going to keep it on the ground, and why wouldn't you when you've got an offensive line like that? As long as you can keep down and distance in your favor, you don't want to be facing a 3rd-and-7 and 3rd-and-8 Riley Ridley. You want to be facing the 3rd-and-1 and 3rd-and-2 and handing off to DeAndre Swift.
So you mentioned a lot of things there, and there's one thing that you didn't mention that I want to get your thoughts on. You mentioned Georgia running the ball a lot. It does. You mentioned the presence of Mecole Hardman and Terry Godwin. That's also true. But the other thing that Georgia does, and to be honest with you, Mike, I don't watch other teams as closely as I watch Georgia, so I don't know how unique this makes Georgia, but I do know from watching Georgia week to week, Mike, as you're very well aware of, they run a bunch of receivers in and out of the game. Now, there's a positive to that. You keep people happy. You keep people feeling like they're part of the team. It's probably good for chemistry to have a lot of different guys playing. But the downside to that is, for the guys that you want to get touches for, you mentioned Godwin. I mentioned Ridley. We can also include Mecole Hardman in this, and I guess probably even maybe more for J.J. Holloman as well. For the guys you want to get involved, when they're only on the field part of the time, they're not going to get as many touches, and they're not going to get as many stats. Do you think the way that Kirby substitutes as liberally as he does the wide receiver position, is that a good or a bad thing?
I think it's a good thing, you know, especially if you're going to carry 14 receivers on scholarship. I mean, that's a high number. You know, in Kirby, you know, he gets the value out of those guys. You know, a lot of programs won't use, you know, receivers are kind of wasted when they're not on the field playing receiver. Georgia, these guys play special teams. You know, the Georgia receivers aren't like a lot of other receiving groups that, you know, most of the time you say, well, what's a receiver going to do for you when he's not out there at receiver? I mean, you look around and you don't see a whole lot of receivers playing special teams like DBs do, like linebackers do, even like some reserve running backs do. It's kind of been looked at as the finesse position, you know, but Kirby sees that as a potential winning edge, and, you know, and that's why he stresses the blocking so much, and really as much as, you know, NFL scouts like what Riley really did as a receiver. They really like what he did as a blocker. I mean, he's a guy that'll knock you out of balance, and that's why Kirby really liked him. Now, I don't know if I think he's a first-round pick. I mean, his combine was, quite frankly, not very good at all. It was actually poor. Didn't seem explosive, didn't run fast, didn't have a good vertical, didn't have a good broad jump. You know, but you turn the tape on, and you know, Riley did some big things against great competition. You know, you look what he did against Alabama, for example, and, you know, there's enough tape from those two Alabama games to get him drafted for sure. But I don't think it was like he was, a Julio Jones talent or anything like that. I don't think he was that far away better than the other receivers on the Georgia football team. I think Jake went to the line and made his pre-snap read, and the throw was predicated on what the defense was giving him.
You wrote a really interesting piece recently about the Georgia offensive line, and one of the names you highlighted there amongst a lot of questions about this group this season. It's probably going to be a really impressive unit, but even impressive units have some questions to be answered, and Georgia's offensive line is no exception with that. You highlighted Ben Cleveland a bit. And, Mike, when I think about guys who – first of all, I don't think we talk enough about how much it hurt Georgia at the end of the season not to have Ben Cleveland fully healthy. If we assume that he is fully healthy this season, this is still a guy from an age standpoint is pretty young. This is a guy that, you know, has shown that he's growing into that role as a really impressive offensive lineman. We use the word breakout name, breakout star a lot this time, you know, time of year. If we get a full year's worth of health from Ben Cleveland, I'm not quite so sure that this young man won't make quite a name for himself by the time it's all said and done. Probably as a guard, you know, probably right there still on that right side. But that to me is a really interesting name to watch, and I think we'll all be reminded of how much Georgia missed him when he was not healthy at the end of last season.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, I thought Cade Mays, you know, stepped in and did about as well as you could ask a true freshman. Cade earned freshman All-American honors, in fact. But, you know, you do wonder, you know, how back is Ben? You know, I know we saw a clip of him in the weight room, but you wonder about his running. I remember Charlie Warner telling us last year, you know, Charlie suffered the same injury in the Rose Bowl. You talk about a guy that was really missed. You know, maybe if Charlie Warner doesn't suffer that broken leg in the Rose Bowl, maybe Georgia wins the national title. He was a big part of the game plan. But digress to Ben Cleveland, you know, so June, July, the timeline, maybe Big Ben will be back all the way. And oh man, you know, the competition there. I mean, there's a chance Cade Mays might not have a starting spot. And that to me is just amazing, or Jamari Sailor. I mean, the talent and the depth of the Georgia offensive line is like none other I've ever seen, and that's good news.
because you look at that Georgia line, BA, and, you know, I don't want to be the bearer of bad news here, but four out of those five guys could be going pro. I do think Andrew Thomas will go pro, the left tackle. If he has a good year, I think he's gone. I wonder about Saul McKinley. I mean, that guy's 6'6", 335, and he can really move. He's draft eligible. Big Ben, this will be his third season now. He's another guy that could leave, as well as Isaiah Wilson. So it's good that Georgia has the depth. It's a good problem to have guys that have that sort of potential and talent that they could consider the NFL after just 3 years. But getting back to Ben Cleveland, I would agree. I thought he was their best run blocker early on last season. I think they did miss him a great deal. I thought that Pittman did an outstanding job juggling those guys around. I think Isaiah was the only one that didn't miss snaps on account of injury. I know Solomon, I think, started every game, but I believe he missed part of a game. He was knocked out of part of a game with an injury. So that depth is invaluable. I believe that depth on the offensive line is what the key to the national championship season would be.
Can I put the cart way before the horse on something just for a minute? You mentioned the fact that Cleveland will be going into a redshirt junior year. He could obviously choose to leave after this season if he wanted to. Some players in his position might. I'm wondering, though, given the fact that, you know, Cleveland is, you know, kind of a young guy from an age standpoint, I'm wondering if sticking around for another year, kicking out to tackle, because I think you're right. I think one way or another, Andrew Thomas is probably gone after this season. I think he'll be a very high first-round draft pick next year. Isaiah Wilson, just given his size and the way that he's grown into his body pretty quickly, he could be as well. I am already thinking a little bit about the situation for Georgia at offensive tackle in 2020. I think Cade Mays is a part of that. And I'm thinking that Ben Cleveland kind of going back eventually to the position we all thought he was going to play to begin with. I'm wondering if that couldn't be a big story for 2020 and Cleveland ends up making a big name for himself from a draft standpoint by being a tackle in his final year for Georgia 2020. Obviously, I don't want to get, you know, rid of 2019 yet. The season hasn't even started yet. But I am thinking a little bit about the role that Cleveland could potentially play for Georgia in 2020 were he to choose to stick around.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's a risk-reward situation for Ben and his family. You know, he's already suffered a broken leg and missed most of one season, so he's certainly aware that there would be a risk in returning. And, there would be a value, as you said, you know, if he could prove he could play offensive tackle, theoretically. Offensive tackles are valued more than offensive guards. But, that's a long way off. That's a situation for Ben and his family to decide. I know, I think Kirby was caught a little off guard by Mecole Hardman going pro, just talking to Mecole a little bit at the combine. And, the way he phrased it, I don't think I ever used the quote, but I asked him, when did you tell Kirby? And he said, well, it was something he thought about midseason, he said, but he didn't tell Coach Smart until after the bowl game, and he said, and that's when it hit the fan. So I don't know what hit the fan, but my guess is Kirby probably wasn't ready for that or expecting that necessarily. Not that he's objecting to it, but from a planning standpoint, Kirby brought up a great point, and this is an issue for college football. They really, one of the unintended consequences of this early signing day, and none of us really knew how it would work out. We didn't know necessarily that the landslide of talent would go early, but that's what's happened. But because the declaration date for the NFL draft isn't until January 14th, a lot of coaches in that early signing day, they don't really know what they're losing yet. And I guess what I'm suggesting here, B.A., is when early signing day rolled around on, December 19, December 20, I don't know that Kirby knew he was losing Mecole Hardman. And so that may have affected, the takes and non-takes for that early signing class. And by the time you find out that Mecole is going pro, it may be too late. One of those other receivers, maybe he didn't know that Mecole was going pro. And maybe had he known that Mecole Hardman was going pro by early signing day, maybe he's a Georgia Bulldog right now. And, so those dates aren't congruent, and it really puts the coaches and the programs in a pickle. And the early signing day rolls around, they still don't know who's going pro. And I do think that played a role, and I think it hurt Georgia recruiting this year, and I don't think Kirby necessarily expected Mecole Hardman to be going pro.
Talked earlier in the week about the Adam Rittenberg report from ESPN that Jake Fromm was part of some guys at the scouting combine. he seemingly is being treated by the NCAA as a guy that very easily could leave Georgia after the 2019 season to go pro. We talked to Trent Dilfer, the quarterback guru, back in early February. He says that he thinks Fromm still has some things to work on. Mike, you see Fromm up close during practice every single day. You'll see him a lot starting this spring. From your perspective, how realistic, how likely is it that 2019 is Fromm's last year at Georgia?
I think it's 50-50, you know. I think that, you know, this is a decision for, you know, again, Jake and his family and the agent. Because as much as anything at that position, what you've got to weigh is the other talent in the class. Are you the number three quarterback coming out in 2020 and the number one quarterback in 2021? Or are you the number, you know, three quarterback coming out in 2020 but the number five coming out in 2021? So you've really got to look at the landscape. You got to look at the other quarterbacks in the class. I can't speak to the, you know, the financial considerations for the Fromm family. I can't speak to where Jake's at in terms of his college experience and you know, what he, you know, how he feels about his legacy. You know, obviously, the most famous guy to come back for a senior year was Peyton Manning at Tennessee. Probably could have been number one year before, but, you know, Peyton Manning didn't have any financial considerations And quite frankly, I think he wanted to win the Heisman Trophy. I don't know what Jake's motivated by. I don't know where – does he like college? Does he like getting up and going to class? You know, because the one thing that people don't take into consideration, yes, you're around your friends, and yes, the college lifestyle is something you can only do once and you should enjoy. But I can tell you that at Georgia, from an academic standpoint, it is demanding and it is exhaustive. And I look at what these student athletes go through and how little of a social life they have and how little time they have. And listen, I'm not going to tell you, oh, you know, it's a different life and it's a difficult one. And if your dream has been to play in the NFL and that's within your grasp, you know, I can certainly see the temptation. So I think Jake could have the ability to come out early. But as to whether he does or not, I just there's so many factors, and I think chief among them is what does the quarterback class look like as far as the business decision he would be making, and then you know, how does Jake Fromm feel about signing autographs at every turn in Athens and getting up for workouts at 5 a.m. and going to class all day. And, you know, weighing that versus the professional lifestyle.
Let me finish up with this really quickly. Mike, I'm a Georgia fan. I'm a Georgia basketball fan. Yet with that said, I was really turned off by the performance last week from this team in Athens and its, you know, home finale, senior night, really not showing up and showing very little effort whatsoever against Missouri. They get a chance for a rematch tonight. But why should Dog fans be excited about this, given how little this team seems to be putting forth the effort, at least based on everything since the Florida game?
Yeah, you know, it was tough. You know, they had their two worst shooting games the last two games of the season, and they got out-rebounded by Missouri 50-28. You know, there's six seniors here, and I suppose if I were going to appeal to the Georgia fans, and I would say, you know what, these guys never lost to Georgia Tech. That's something that you can take with you. These seniors never lost to Georgia Tech. These seniors, they never embarrassed the program in off-court incidents. I'm not aware of any violence, anybody hitting anybody innocently in Athens, anybody doing anything that would bring embarrassment to the program. These seniors had opportunities to go other places. They chose Georgia. And these seniors stuck with the program when their head coach left. Things haven't gone like they would like, obviously. And Georgia is not a place that I would ever suggest should accept losing in any sport with the facilities and the academics and the incredible town of Athens that it has to offer. There's no reason why Georgia shouldn't be one of the top all-around sports programs in the country. And, by the way, it is. Greg McGarrity's done a very nice job with that. We know results are the bottom line. I know this, BA. I know this, and I've said this. When you cover a team, you know, you learn to respect individuals, and you look for storylines. I wouldn't say you're a fan of the team, but I've watched this Georgia team play LSU within one possession, play Mississippi State within one possession, play Ole Miss within one possession, play Auburn within one possession, beat Texas by 10 points. beat Georgia Tech, win at Florida. I've seen enough out of these guys that I hope for their sake that they can get a win at the SEC tournament. Right. I hope that they can leave on a positive note and get one win and give themselves a chance to play Auburn, because they played Auburn pretty tough.
It should be. Should certainly be interesting to see, Mike. We certainly appreciate your time. Thanks for being with us. We'll enjoy your coverage from Nashville, the SEC tournament. We'll look forward to speaking to you again soon.
Thanks, Pierre.
Take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Good stuff there from Mike Griffith. A couple points that he makes that I want to follow up on. I actually think that his thing about Fromm and the 50-50 is probably a pretty good split. I think there's about a half a chance that he goes out there and does everything he needs to do, and it becomes this what do you call it, fait accompli. Just becomes this obvious situation where he has to go be a first-round pick, because if you're going to be one, I think you got to do that. It's just too much of a life-changing experience not to. But there's also a chance, and you can hear some of the stuff that Dilfer said about Fromm in terms of what he needs to do, where either there's unfinished business on the part of the team, unfinished business for Fromm, where coming back the final year makes the most sense. If you look at the quarterback depth, I know Connor Riley wrote about this at DogNation.com this morning. If you look at the quarterback depth, I believe it's set up right now with the thoughts that Fromm will be here all 4 years. So maybe that's the plan that's in place, and it kind of falls into that at a certain point in time. But it's a coin flip. It could happen, could not. I think it's important to remember, though, how much the people outside the bubble of Dog Nation are treating Fromm as if he could very easily be a first-round pick in 2020. So that's worth paying attention to. The other thing that Mike said that I kind of jotted down, and I want to make a point out of, that, and obviously I talk about wide receivers a lot. I think that's a big-time missing piece for Georgia in its pursuit of a national championship. Mike on Kirby's use the wide receivers, he says that Kirby's getting value out of these guys. And that is true. Value out of a lot of different wide receivers. We talked about that off the top of the program and how Riley Ridley fits into the overall committee for Georgia wide receiver, and how he may, even being ill-used, lightly used at times, go on to be a top 50 pick in the NFL draft. But one thing I will say, though, moving forward, I think the challenge for Kirby Smart is not to get some value out of a lot of guys, but take a big, long list of potential receivers and turn somebody into a great one. And in 2019, that's the difference in a national championship to me. It's a Demetrius Robertson. It's a freshman like George Pickens doing what Justin Ross did for Clemson a year ago, what Jerry Jeudy did a bit for Alabama in 2017. It's taking one of those guys and saying, we're going to make you more than just a good receiver. We're going to make you a difference-making player that blows the top off of defense. I think it's really important. We've got a five-year track record of college football playoffs to look at. No team has ever won the national championship without having at least one receiver gain 900 or more yards through the air. That is seemingly a line of demarcation separating the great teams from the not-quite-as-great teams, and Georgia's going to do that in 2019. Yesterday on our program, we talked a decent amount about our actually, before we do that, let me remind you about a really cool thing coming up at Kroger. Let me not forget about this. Kroger's got a big thing coming up for St. Patrick's Day. It's kind of a fun holiday. Many of you love that. Some of you like going out and being a part of that. Some of you like being at home and having that great, authentic St. Patrick's Day meal. Well, listen, Kroger's got that for you. Corned beef, brisket, cabbage, potatoes, all that stuff. Great savings and opportunities to make the perfect St. Patrick's Day dinner, so please check that out. Here's a website you can go to, Kroger.com/whatsfordinner. Kroger.com/whatsfordinner, and you can find out how you can make this year's St. Patrick's Day even more fun with our friends at your local Atlanta Kroger. Now, with that said, let me talk about the over-under stuff. You know, yesterday I talked about Georgia. Bet Online, where the online sports books put out its over-unders, Georgia at 10.5. I explained briefly yesterday how, even though there's seemingly a bit of a gap between Georgia and Alabama. Alabama said 11, Georgia said at 10.5. If you look at the so-called juice, the vigorish that the sportsbook adds, the difference between Georgia and Alabama is actually not that great. That's probably more information than many of you care about. But nonetheless, since I mentioned Georgia yesterday with its season win total set at 10.5, I thought it might be worth mentioning a few of the other SEC teams here for a moment. As I said before, Alabama is set at 11. If you force me to make this bet, over or under regular season wins for Alabama, because that's what this is, regular season wins, over or under, going under. Now, can sort of see the money leaping out of my wallet as I say that. I'm even getting laughed at on the other side of the glass for this. I know this seems like it ought to be an easy bet for the over, given how weak as water Alabama's non-conference schedule is. They play Duke to open the season, then it's directional schools and every other non-conference game. The SEC West is tougher this year, though. It's tougher than it's been in a while. Auburn on the road, no pushover. LSU, I think pretty good. Texas A&M, I think pretty good. I think there's a chance that Alabama gets a loss out of that group, and then you just need one more crazy thing to happen for you. I might go under Alabama at 11. Many of you will say that's wishful thinking. You may very well be right. LSU at 9, according to BetOnline, I'd probably go over on that. I'm actually fairly high on LSU. I like the freshman running backs. I wish one of them was at Georgia, to be sure. I think the wide receiver core is pretty deep. I think they're actually going to do a pretty good job of replacing what they lost defensively. Grant Delpit's a candidate for national awards. I like LSU over the 9. I'll go Florida under the 9 for obvious reasons. I'll go Mississippi State under 8. That's one of the numbers that's out there. I'll go under on Mississippi State just because I think they get caught up in the depth that is the SEC West. Auburn at 8 seems like a really good number. Once again, if you put a gun to my head and force me to take this, I'll take Auburn over 8. I got Auburn finishing the year in the top 25, or at least in the top 25 when it plays Georgia in November. How about that much at least? And if that's the case, you probably got to go over on that. Another really good number is Tennessee at 7. Tennessee at 7 feels about right to me. That feels about right. But if you force me to go over or under, given the fact they play Alabama, the East is a little bit better, I'm going to go under Tennessee and say the Jeremy Pruitt era hasn't quite gotten off to that hot of a start. I'll go under on Tennessee. We'll do a million more things with this over the course of time. But that's some early thoughts on some of these 2019 SEC teams, and we'll make that your SEC through. Okay, so here for a moment on Dog Nation Daily, before we give away our Road to Atlanta t-shirt, let me apologize for doing something that's kind of video only, radio audience, podcast audience. We don't mean to make you feel left out, but you can go. I tell you what, if you don't know what we're about to show, go to dognation.com. Our buddy Michael Carvel has linked this video on dognation.com. It should be easy to find. So go to the website, theworldfamousdognation.com. You can see this. A lot of you sent this to me. You know I love football players dunking a basketball. Pretty impressive athleticism from Dwan Mathis, the 2019 quarterback signee, who says he's inviting all would-be blockers to meet him at the rim. And by blockers, I mean shot blockers, not offensive line blockers. And he's going to throw this down. I think that Mathis is a really athletic guy. I'm not quite sure yet how that translates to future quarterback at Georgia and the SEC, but that dunk, the other stuff we've seen from him in the football field, there is no doubt that that Mathis is he's a really impressive athlete. And on G-Day, that's going to be one of the things probably worth watching, worth paying attention to, is how that athleticism transfers early on to him competing to be the backup quarterback at Georgia. One thing we know about Mathis is, in addition to that really good athleticism, he has also got a really good head on his shoulders. This is not a kid coming in with outsized ego, inflated sense of his self-worth. He, despite the fact that he is a tremendous athlete, is coming to Georgia to learn and hopefully gain a little bit of the insight that Jake Fromm has used over the last couple of seasons. He told this to our buddy Mike Griffith back right after he signed at Georgia. I love this line from Dwan Mathis.
Really, I'm just coming in to work and put my head down and do what I'm supposed to do. I'm not coming in to – of course I'm going to compete, but I'm not coming in to just try to push Jake Fromm out the way and take his job, because, of course, the chance of that happening are very low. He, as soon as he came in, he went straight to the national championship and played for a national championship. A game that a lot of people thought they were going to win to the very end, came down to the last wire. But really, when I come in, I'm just coming in to work hard and do what I'm supposed to do and learn what I can from Jake Fromm and see where that can take me.
Now, what's even better from Mathis is you hear the humility, the perspective, the maturity. But that doesn't mean he's lacking in confidence. Someone that can do what we just saw Mathis doing, dunking that way, running the way that he does in a football field, he ought to have confidence in his own abilities, his own skill set, his own athleticism, and Mathis clearly does.
Really just my ability to make plays. I mean, outside, the play could break down, and with me just having my ability and my God-given talents, man, God just blessed me with some different kind of stuff that I can do outside of the pocket. I can make any throw. I can throw any ball, and that's just the biggest thing.
So, listen, I love that combination of I believe in my own abilities, and yet I'm also coming to Georgia to learn. And the more you see examples of him on a football field, and we've shown you his highlights a million times, the dunk, which is mostly fun, but still, I mean, you got to be a pretty good athlete to jump up that high. I'm not quite sure how vertical leap helps you at the quarterback position, but it can't hurt to be that kind of athlete. Pretty impressive stuff when it comes to a Dwan Mathis, and that should be pretty fun to see starting this spring. That Stetson Bennett versus Dwan Mathis competition, that's going to be kind of a fun one. And, you know, Georgia finding a stopgap backup quarterback in case Jake Fromm has to leave a game for a brief moment, that's an important question for Georgia this upcoming season. All right, we have come to the time of the show today where I need to give away my Road to Atlanta t-shirt. Congratulations goes out to our winner for today, Marcus Bradshaw. Marcus sent an email to us yesterday showing him subscribed to our podcast and the Apple Podcast Player. Marcus, we really appreciate that. Your Road to Atlanta t-shirt will be on the way soon. And as we wrap up today on the show, let me also tell you how you can be a winner for the Road to Atlanta t-shirt tomorrow. We're going to kind of make this as, I guess, open for everybody as possible. Not everybody has, you know, the different platforms. So we're trying to move around and make this an easy opportunity for everybody. Once again, like we did a few days ago, I will send out a link or to the podcast on Twitter today, at Dog Nation Daily on Twitter. Simply find at Dog Nation Daily on Twitter. When I tweet out today's show in podcast form, please do me a favor, retweet that. It helps other people who don't know about our show find the show. That's a big boost to us. And as a way of saying thank you for that, I'll take all the retweets from that today. I'll put them in a pot. I'll draw a name out, and we'll announce another Road to Atlanta t-shirt giveaway tomorrow. So good stuff on that. Let me also say, lousy, stinking Gators. Around here, we don't like them. And it's been 865 days since that bunch has beaten Georgia. It's our Gator Hater Updater. That's good news. We'll see you tomorrow here on Dog Nation Daily.